You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network. Holy Diver, and then I realized I couldn't remember how it went because that was.
You've been
how can you not remember
time?
Holy Diver?
I know Holy Diver, and that's as far as I get.
Or hit the notes,
yeah, yeah, even just close, even come, which would have been appropriate because this movie, Baby Driver, is deeply drenched in music.
Sopranos.
This is a movie that was made so that everyone could see how really awesome Edgar Wright's record collection is. Let's be real,
kind of. Even when Richard and I saw it. With him there in attendance, and he was talking about, yeah, I pretty much got the idea to make this movie by listening to my iPod. It's like,
or,
yeah.
Or,
no
conversely,
shit.
By watching Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, no, and this, to be fair, he's actually had this knocking around from pretty much, you know, spaced. this has been in his back pocket for you know, since before Shaun of the Dead.
I mean, yeah, and it was the idea to make it a jukebox musical there all the time.
Yeah.
All right.
That was that. Yeah. In fact, if you want to see the proof of concept, just after Spaced, he did a video for a British band, and it is actually this. It's this exact idea.
Just as a 2 minute video.
Just laid out as a 2 minute video, and it's been burning away in Edgar Wright's the back of his head ever since then. And finally, he went, "Oh, I can now actually do this, and they'll give me the money to do it, and it'll be okay."
Well deserved.
Well, let's do our introductions. I'm Chris.
John.
Richard.
Harris.
Oh.
And, you know, it seems like there's a lot of different opinions about this movie out there, to be sure. I've talked to people who everything from, I adore it, it's my favorite Edgar Wright film and the best film of the year, to people who were like, I absolutely despise this film and I don't think, even Edgar Wright knew what he was doing.
Wow.
Highly wrong.
Actually, I agree with both of those people deeply, because I actually fall somewhere like three quarters towards good, I think.
So three quarter beat?
Well, I mean, like, I think this is, like, from me, this was his weakest film, but it also is so much better than most people's films. So
yeah. I'm actually kind of right on board with you there. Other than, is it At World's End? I don't remember what
the World's
one is.
End.
I
yeah.
forget that
yeah,
one
I was
the
about
most.
To say, you thought this was worse than
yeah,
the
that's
World's
the,
End?
That's
yeah,
the one
a
I
little
think
bit.
Sort of,
really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Huh.
But, okay, so that's we've got our first wrong vote.
But part of the thing here is, like, much like all his other films, this is his exploration of a very specific and sometimes obscure niche in film. In this case, like movies like The Driver, where it's taking those 70s and 80s like crime driving films that really focus on the stunt driving and putting the Edgar Wright touch on it, filled with lots of little hidden references and nooks and crannies that maybe are less familiar to a lot of people than, you know, the zombie ones. But probably no less thick with it. The story we have here is Ansel Elgort is the titular baby, who we never really know his real name, but I guess.
Yeah, we do. We find out at the end.
Oh, do we? Okay. Yeah. It's been longer.
His real name is Miles Teller.
But he's not as snarky looking as Miles.
No, he will be soon.
But when you find out his real name, suddenly his face gets so much more punchable.
He's a really young guy who listens to music constantly because he has really, really bad tinnitus from an accident he was in when he was a kid, when his parents got killed in it. And now he found himself in a scenario, when you find out eventually later why in the movie, where he's working for Kevin Spacey, who is Doc, a kingpin of crime. Lower level kingpin who organizes bank heists and heists of various sorts.
He's just a duke pin.
Yeah, yes, he's a court jester pin. And he gets a rotating crew of people he works with, except for Baby, because Baby is just the baddest ass driver ever. Problem is a lot of the people he hooks him up with, a lot of the criminals, are like, what the fuck is going on? This guy is like 10, and he's not even listening to anything except his music. He's got his headphones in the whole time.
I mean, he's not like he's 10. It's just like he's kind of autistic-y. You know, he always has his headphones on, generally always has his sunglasses on. And they're like, is this guy even paying attention? And he's supposed to be my driver, but he actually is, you know, very aware. He's just, you know, one of those guys. He doesn't talk a lot, much like
Ryan Gosling in The Driver, which is another pay on to the original Walter Hill's Driver.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
In fact, both of them kind of rip off the first action driving scene from that movie.
Yes.
Almost move for move.
Well, I mean, Edgar Wright's been very open about the, you know, this is absolutely a love letter to Walter Hill. And,
oh, yeah.
Well, still from the best.
Well, as he's told Walter Hill that his big hope is that people will go, so, what's this thing, The Driver? He's like, go see that as well.
Yes.
Like, watch my movie.
Which was a bigger hit in Europe and was kind of panned here, but now it's become a classic.
Yeah, I just watched it the first time recently at the demanding of my friends, the Summers Brothers. We're like, you've never watched The Driver? We're literally going to sit on top of you until you watch it. And they brought it over.
Now you have to watch Barry Lyndon.
I've seen it.
No, he doesn't.
The rest of the crew that were introduced here along the way is we have John Hamm as Buddy, Jamie Foxx as Bats, John Bernthal as Griff, Eliza Gonzalez as Darling, Flea, briefly, as Eddie No-Nose.
Actually, I think Flea was in there almost as much as Bernthal.
Yeah, you might be right.
Bernthal was a blinking emission.
He was kind of, they kind of set him up like, I'm going to do something. He's like, yeah, I'm not going to do something.
Meanwhile, Baby's like almost paid off his debt to Kevin Spacey, who's like, oh, I'm going to be done driving soon. And he meets
Which
his...
Which you didn't.
Meets his,
because he does owe him for...
He owes him for the previous thing that we...
We're not going to mention.
Yeah. Yep. Well, didn't that happen much later in the film when they explain it, right?
No, they mention it pretty early on when they're explaining why Baby's there.
It comes up pretty early in the film that he's in Dutch to Spacey's character for something.
No, that's what I'm saying. They don't explain the details of that till much later in the film. Yeah. But it's not that important.
Yeah, you don't really need the details. All you need to know is that he owes a lot of money, and so his cut is going to pay down his debt.
But he's nearly finished.
And Baby has met a hot waitress played by Lily James that he's hitting it off with in a big way, and he's thinking, maybe me and this girl, once we're all paid off, we're going to get and drive off into the sunset.
Yeah, in a completely different movie, he's met a lovely waitress where they have their first date at the Wes Anderson laundromat.
Yeah, kind of.
His joke.
Like, I guess the movie is... like more of a tone than it is a plot being important. You know, it's more like this is the theme with the music is so important and it's so loud and we're setting every scene in it and all the beats and all the things people are doing to the beats of the music that really the plot is almost circumstantial by comparison.
Yeah, the style overwhelms the substance by a fair amount because there are plot beats that crop up in this that make no damn sense, but they're there because it works. It feels good. Just don't think about it.
Yeah, I think that's true. I know one thing that held me back from really being as in love with this movie is that I thought Jamie Foxx was just obnoxious. Like, he has so much screen time and so much dialogue, and I know he's supposed to be the villain of sorts, one of the villains, which there are many in here, but really the most unlikable villain. And I just want him to shut up every time he starts talking.
I think that's the main point. I didn't feel any tension until he got into the movie.
Right.
Well, I know, but he kept doing it.
No, but that's what I'm saying.
Over and over again.
There are villains that are fun to watch, and there are villains that you're just like, you're not funny. You're just irritating.
No,
stop
I agree.
Talking.
We saw another movie today which did just that.
Well, that I disagree with, but we'll get into that in a few weeks when we're allowed to talk about it. I mean, obviously, you guys seem to like this a lot more than I did. I mean, I definitely really love John Hamm in this thing. I thought they do this great thing with his character in the third act that it sells because of how much you really like him for a while. He is definitely the most charming criminal of them all.
Yeah, they do some interesting development with his character because he and Darling, his girlfriend, are the only people who treat Baby with any respect outside of Doc.
Yeah.
And because they can recognize skill. They know that the kid can do what he can do. It's everybody else who seems to think that, like, this kid is off in his own world and rapidly running out of oxygen. Why the fuck is he here? Even after he is shown that when you put him behind the wheel, he is godlike. And his driving scenes are equal parts writing Bean and Initial D, and there is exactly one fan listening to this who got both of those.
And Kevin Spacey gets some of the best lines in this thing, I think.
Oh, he's having so much fun with this movie.
Just chewing up the whole scenery and like delivering his dialogue in a way only Spacey can. And, you know, lots of nicknames for everybody that are constantly funny. I mean, he's the character that in many ways is, I thought, the strongest part of this entire film, other than Edgar Wright himself and his direction of the driving, which is really spot fucking on.
Yeah. And that's one of the great things about this is a practical driving film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a gearhead film, because one of the things that Edgar Wright avoids very much is they're doing bank heists. You don't go in with a muscle car because the cops will see you. And in fact, there's some great moments where, you know, the fact that they are using very innocuous cars is part of how they get away. And it's like, if you're in a helicopter, it's just another red car. It's just, you know...
Avoid the Impala, however.
Or the Honda Civic.
Yes.
Most stealable car in the world. But, you know, and this is... It's a practical driving car. I mean, this isn't like when you watch Fast and the Furious, and one of the things that I really dislike about the franchise now is you're like, it's CG. None of this cares. You don't really feel there's any impact to this. This is them just tooling around Atlanta at high speed. Yep. Mm-hmm. Trashing cars left, right, and center.
I mean,
and
the first speech,
glorious.
The first chase, you get the patented Rockford Files. You know, hit your wheel over as far as possible, and while pulling up the emergency handbrake at the same time.
Yeah. It is constant bootlegger turns and constant power drifting.
Oh yeah, it's great. Yeah, that first shot where he just power drift slides in between two cars. I was like, how did you do that? I need to get my Grand Theft Auto 5 and practice that.
Yeah, people are going to be recreating this movie in Grand Theft Auto online.
Y'all talking about all the cars, it does kind of bring up the problem that I had with the movie. Is it
too much cars?
Even though it's a movie about cars and speed and everything, it felt the slowest out of all of his movies. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's because the editing felt slowed down, because... I don't know. Maybe the cast is more built for American audiences.
This movie could have been hustled along quite a bit.
Yeah. There's a big gap in the middle of this film where it slows way down for way longer than you would think it would.
Yeah.
And don't make a movie with the word driver in the title if you're not in some kind of car thing like every 5 minutes or so. You kind of want to keep pouring that on.
I think that kind of sums up what I was saying earlier is like, it feels slow for him, not necessarily for other movies I've seen. Yeah. So I do put it in a category where it's like one of my, like on the lower list of his movies for me, but it's still better than what everyone else does.
Yeah, no, agreed. The slowness, though, is
that's him maturing as a director and an editor, because a lot of his staccato approach, I think, was nerves. I think he really felt he had to put something into every frame. And, you know, in the Cornetto trilogy, that really is just like, just edit like this, edit it to death. And he's very good at that. I mean, he edits it to within an inch of his life, but keeps it there. Scott Pilgrim, you know, every frame has 50 things going on.
Sure.
And this is, I think, is Edgar Wright going, you know what? That's a young man's game. I don't need to be that director. I don't need to hit the razor every 30 seconds.
He might have chosen a better subject matter to do that with than a car chase movie.
And yet this film is all
that I'm saying. I'm not saying that's a bad thing for a director to get towards, but yeah, sometimes in this film it is.
But it's
it
only that
really
middle act that is what you're talking about, because the first and the third act are all that Edgar Wright style. It's very staccato in a good way. It's like, so, I mean, talk about an editing nightmare. Jesus, they're matching up everything to the song so exactly.
And they're doing it, and half the time they're doing it in continuous takes.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually quite a wonder technically that they made it work. Those scenes work as well as it did, but it's also the strength of that first and third act that makes that second act feel like it sags so goddamn much. And part of it to me is as well, and y'all probably will disagree with me here, but I thought Ansel Elgort is more of a look what he can do more than who cares who he is. He plays him very down, very emotionless, and when I watch him connecting with Lily James, I see no chemistry. I'm not interested. I just want to get back to the driving. In fact, with the exception of Jamie Foxx, I want to get back to the other criminals who are much more interesting
people.
One
of the things I noticed in the middle section, which I really think is part of the reason why it slowed down, is that's where the music disappeared.
Yeah.
As soon as the earbuds are out of his ears, then suddenly everything is at a lot slower pace, and they're back into that Wes Anderson meet cute that they've been hinting at through the entire time. It's when the two collide at high speeds that suddenly it gets really interesting again. because now it's literally a Wes Anderson character finding out that she's in the middle of a gangster movie and watching the reaction to it that makes it so much more interesting.
What was the years ago there was a Wes Anderson does like a fake trailer for him doing an action movie or a horror movie. That's what it was.
They had him do like a cabin in the woods type of thing.
Yeah. I still want to see him do that.
It would be the most symmetrical horror movie you've ever seen.
Right. It's like, man, this killer only likes to kill people who live in incredibly symmetrical houses.
Somewhere Wes Anderson's going like, has nobody noticed they're all horror films? And just doesn't get it. Just doesn't know. He's like, it's the metaphysical terror of it all.
It's the nausea of the human condition.
It's the terror of knowing that the world is about.
Twee of the dead. but I kid Wes Anderson. Anyway, let's go into final thoughts. Harris, why don't you get us started?
This is a movie that you're going to get the soundtrack because it's going to make you feel so much cooler. You are going to be listening to this and recognizing all the samples that your favorite DJs, hip-hop artists, and pretty much everyone else has ever used. Something which actually fucked me up a couple of times when I'm hearing a musical score and I'm like, oh, they're about to do House of Pain. No, they're fucking not. But it does drag in bits. The relationship between Elcourt and James is kind of cute, but it's kind of like, well, it's in the script. And it kind of leaves you wishing that the two stories would collide a little bit quicker and make it much more dynamic, I guess, and more interesting. And then there come plot twists where, again, it's stuff that happens because it's in the script and it looks really good on screen, but if you think about it for all of 5 seconds, it falls apart. Which is why I'm going to have to give this 8 out of 10 varied classic iPod collections.
Jonathan Romo, what is your final thoughts?
I believe, like, to reiterate what Bo and Richard had said, I do understand that Edgar Wright probably is getting more comfortable and wants to slow things down. But as Bo had said, it's a really odd decision to choose a fast car movie to do that. The first and third acts when everything feels the most Edgar Wrightian, when I feel so comfortable. And it's like, yes, this is the director I know and love. But that middle bit, when it does focus on the meet cute, which I do think they seem really naive, and I think that kind of fits in with the whole he's a young person. But that still doesn't like help carry that middle bit to, like Chris said, we want to get back to the exciting characters, the ones who feel like they were written by Edgar Wright. But all in all, I still think one of Edgar Wright's weakest films is one of the best films of 2017 so far. So I have to give this 8.5 tequilas.
Mr. Bo Paul.
I mean, this is stylish as all get out, and there's a lag in the middle, and yeah, the romance is really lackluster, but this is a shitload of fun to watch and listen to. You know, if you can get over that little hump in the middle, then you're gonna be fine. There's plenty to be enjoyed in here. You know, you can close your eyes and enjoy this music, and you can watch it with the sound off, probably enjoy it. And I agree that Hand does a great job here. Not exactly getting out of his wheelhouse as a disparate person with substance problems, but he is making a very fun and interesting character to watch. I didn't have a problem with Jamie Foxx, because, you know, Jamie Foxx always kind of annoys me. So.
You went into it expecting.
So, yeah, no, it was just like, it's all like, right, well,
tone it down, Miami Vice.
You've got the, we're good. Spacey was great. Ansel Elgort, I'm still not sold on him as a leading man, but they found a perfect role for him in this. He kind of serves the role to be a little bit of a cipher. Because that's how he is described. And for the most part, this thing fires on all cylinders. It's stylish fun. It's a great summer movie. Go and have fun in the theaters. I give it, a strong 8.5, miniature Ryan O'Neill's wearing scorpion jackets.
So, Richard Whittaker.
What I really like about this is an excellent example of a British director making a profoundly American film. And it never feels like, oh, he doesn't get it. He gets absolutely, I mean, he's so immersed in film culture and film history that it just pours out of this. And at the end of the day, it's a crime film and it's a car movie. It's also a musical. I mean, there's a lot of West Side Story hidden in here if you really look at it for 5 seconds. Because, you know, he choreographs the chase sequences like dance routines. There's something rather wonderful about that. I mean, it is at his best when he's channeling his inner Walter Hill. It's weaker when he's channeling his inner Michael Mann. You know, Elgort cannot carry a diner sequence in the same way that De Niro can. But, you know, there's something, you know, pretty damn spectacular about this. And it's more fun than most things you're going to see this year. It's more fun, particularly than any of the blockbusters, where most of the good ones have actually been pretty miserable. and fairly bleak, but this is just a damn fun slice of cinema. I'm gonna go with the consensus and give this 8.5 screaming gears.
You know, this is a movie that definitely sets out to have fun with its audience, and its soundtrack is one of the things I love about it. It's all over the place. The choices, they're so varied, so many things that if there's something you don't like, literally wait 2 minutes and the next song, which will start right after it, is probably
what
something
are you talking
you really
about?
Like.
Aren't all of your Spotify playlists like this?
Yeah, actually.
Yeah. it's the other people that are wrong.
It's true. How did you know? It's like you're reading my mind.
Oh, by the way, you do get extra points if you can spot the cameos by both Walter Hill and John Spencer Blues Explosion.
Exactly.
I think I heard you laugh when that happened.
Oh, yeah. Partially, I'm a big fan of that band. This movie starts with one of the greatest songs they ever wrote and plays the entire song as a car action sequence goes on. And I was just like, this movie's going to be fantastic. And like I said, it was up and down for me throughout this. And one of the main things I blame it on is really Ansel Elgort's character. Not so much his lack of a performance, but this is one of those movies I kept thinking of, you know, it would have been so much cooler if they had structured it this way.
If he had had cancer, this thing would have killed.
Okay, shut up, Bo. But I don't like to do that usually, but I did kept thinking, even especially in the middle, how much more I would have liked it if type of thing. And I realized that's not the movie we saw. I got to judge it by the movie it is. And it's one that its sag in the middle was so deep that I actually started to lose interest almost completely. But it wins you back in a huge way in the end. And by the end of it, I was like, that was fun. And I would definitely recommend it to people to see in the theater for sure. I give this 7.5 out of 10 bell bottoms. Because, you know, bell bottoms. Bell bottoms. Bell bottoms. If you haven't bought Orange by the John Spencer Blues Explosion, do it right now. It's fantastic.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Club, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.